Louisiana Prep Weekly, presented by GMFS. Let's go! A weekly comprehensive look inside high school athletics around the state on 104.5, 104.9 ESPN Baton Rouge. From the recruiting trails to the offices of the LHSAA, we'll have you covered. Now, here's Kate Wazan, Todd Black, and Jimmy Roy. This is Louisiana Prep Weekly on 104.5, 104.9 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Welcome back to Louisiana Prep Weekly here live from Schlitz and Giggles underneath the Perkins Road overpass. Kate Wazan and Todd Black. We now welcome in a man who will be soon inducted into the Louisiana High School Sports Hall of Fame. Longtime, legendary Parkview Baptist head baseball coach, Mr. M.L. Woodruff. Thanks so much for joining us tonight, M.L.
Hey, thanks for having me. It's a privilege to be here. Thanks for the invitation.
I got to say, first off, what was it like to get the phone call? Where were you? How did it happen?
Well, it happened. I was playing a Fellowship of Christian Athlete golf tournament. My goal was, when I got out of coaching, to play golf more, and I play golf less now. So I was getting ready to do what I do best. I was getting ready to eat lunch, and my friend Darren Mitchell, head baseball coach at Parkview Baptist, made the phone call and said, "I heard a rumor." So honoring. It was very humbling to get the call.
How do you is there a secret formula, a secret recipe to longevity for you as far as being able to be so successful for so long in one place?
I had a recipe. My goal was just to do my job and not try to do other people's job and get involved with things that really didn't matter to me. So I stuck my head down and went and coached baseball and coached kids and taught classes.
So the one thing, we'll get right into it, because the one thing when I was reading about you is something that that when I was in high school, which is along the same time you started, I was never told why. I was always told because I said so. But it seems to be a philosophy of yours that throughout the years you always wanted to teach the why before you taught the how. And to me, I like that philosophy, because I think these days if kids don't understand why, they're not going to put as much effort into it. What was the reason why you chose to do it that way?
Well, I don't think we were so much different than other kids. I just think we were scared to ask the why to our coaches.
That's probably true.
Because of those reasons. So I think we ask why amongst our friends. So I told our kids all the time, if I can't explain the why to you, then you don't have to do it. There's got to be a reason why we do what we do, and there's a purpose for it. And if I can't teach you that and tell you that, then you don't have to do it. So we always, in the learning process, if we taught why first, they always bought into how we did it.
So let's give an example, and I'll just use the example that was in the article that I read about a sacrifice bunt. And if you were to explain, you know, the why to it. And the reason I want to go through this process, because people may not understand exactly what we mean.
Well, we talked about two things about kids being great team players. Anybody can learn how to run bases well, and anybody can learn how to bunt well. And if you do those two things, you're a team player. So in a coach of a team sport, we always stress teamwork. So one of the ways we did that was through the sacrifice bunt. So we told them why we did what we did. The intention was to move a runner to the next base while giving yourself up, while the other person on base is more important than you are, because we'll score a run from it. So we taught our kids to, after a successful sacrifice bunt, that the entire dugout would leave the dugout and come out to the person that bunted the ball on the ground to move the team over, to let him know how big it was for our team for him to do that.
So, Kate, from what I understand, you know, the sacrifice bunt played a very important role in one of the now I'm getting this story secondhand, so I need to make sure it's right, but it was told
to
me.
You have to question your source.
That you had a 2009 state championship versus St. Charles Catholic. You had a fellow by the name of James Coates that was coming to the plate. You obviously could tell he was a little bit nervous. You asked him what he was thinking. He said, "Coach, I'm nervous." You answered him, "Don't worry about it. You're going to get a double. Lejeune's going to sacrifice you over, and then they're going to make an error. We're going to score and win." And that's kind of what happened. Is that exactly how the story goes?
Well, we were the score was we were ahead by a run, and St. Charles, we're playing St. Charles Catholic in the state championship game, and they had a runner at second base with two outs. They had two strikes on the batter. They ran a hit and run, and the hitter hit it off the wall. I thought it was a home run. I thought we were fixing to lose, and I was trying to take the speech out of my talk where I had one prepared where, in case we lose, what to say. Well, the ball went up, and right before it got to the fence, it fell into fair territory, and he got a double, and they did score a run. The score was tied. So the coach came out and argued the call for about 10 minutes, gave up time for our pitcher to warm up, who was Drew Dilio. He threw three pitches, and we struck him out. So I'm like, we got a chance here. So gather everybody up in front of the dugout as we do, because I was called the human rain delay by some. So anyway, we got the kids together in front of the dugout, and James Coates was the hitter, and I did tell him that he was going to get a base hit.
Okay.
I did tell him that he sort of messed up the scenario. He had a double off the wall, and then Brant did come up, and we were going to lay down a sacrifice bunt, so I gave the sacrifice bunt sign. He bunted for base hit, bunted it in the dirt. Perfect bunt down the line, and the third baseman came up and threw it down the right field line, and Cubs win.
You know, interesting, the two kids you mentioned there, I had the opportunity to coach when I was at Parkview, but both very good football players as well. So there was a lot of good dual sport athletes during your time at Parkview.
There was, and those guys were good athletes, and we loved them playing football because it made them mentally and physically tough. And I had a son that played for Coach Giott, and I'm very fortunate. We're blessed that he did play for Coach, because it did make him tougher. So we love for our kids to play both sports.
So the mentally tough aspect, I've got a lot of notes on this as well. I can take you back to a game versus Rummel. They said Rummel was one of the ranked baseball teams in the country. A lot of media. You ended up pitching, I believe he was a sophomore, and your logic behind it was to see how he would react under pressure, because you knew that he would be needed for you to get to your ultimate goal that year. If I had the kid that somebody, he ended up playing at Mississippi State.
Of course, more.
Uh-huh. Is that kind of the job of a baseball coach, is to put kids in the most pressure situations and see how they react?
Not necessarily. We had some great games with Rummel, so it's hard to tell which one it was until you mentioned Forrest's name. We want to put our kids in situations where they have a chance to be successful.
Mm-hmm.
We've got to prepare them for those times. We don't throw them out there in the fire and say, hope you do well today. You know, part of what we want to do is make sure that we take care of them and they're prepared for the next thing. So if you throw them out there and they don't succeed, you may lose them for the whole season. So we don't throw them out there unless they were ready.
So in this particular instance, is this something that you wanted to challenge him a little bit?
No, we were out of pitching. There was nobody out.
See, I didn't tell me that part of the story.
This is the year that we were 2-9, and I got called in the office by Coach Giott and Superintendent Mr. Hill, and they wanted to know what was going on. So I said, "What are you talking about?" And they said, "We're 2-9." I says, "I know. I've been to every game. I haven't missed any of them. Thank God we'd won a couple state championships. Before that, our pilot got fired." So anyway, that year we were young. We had some things go on where some kids were not eligible. Some kids that had left the program and decided on playing other sports. So we, on that particular night, we put him out there because really there was nobody else. But you know, he was ready for the moment. So Frank Cazzo, the coach for Rome, was a good friend of mine. He's screaming at his kids like, "These guys aren't even old enough to drive." Like, we've got 9th and 10th graders out there, and we're competing. They end up beating us on that night, but it was a night that we really grew up.
I know there's lots more stories and things we want to ask you about, Coach. Can you stick around for one more segment?
Sure, love to.
We'll take a quick break. We'll be right back more with legendary Parkview Baptist head baseball coach, soon to be inducted into the 2016 Louisiana High School Sports Hall of Fame, M.L. Woodruff. Cade Wazan and Todd Black here at Slits and Giggles underneath the Perkins Road overpass for Louisiana Prep Weekly, 104.5, 104.9 ESPN Baton Rouge.
This is Louisiana Prep Weekly on 104.5, 104.9 ESPN Baton Rouge.
Schlitz and Giggles underneath the Perkins Road overpass. Cade Wisant and Todd Black. We're here with a longtime legendary baseball coach, M.L. Woodruff, of Parkview Baptist from 82 to 2010. And soon he'll be inducted into the Louisiana High School Sports Hall of Fame. Coach Woodruff, I asked this of Coach Guyot last week. What got you into coaching?
Well, Cade, I never wanted to coach. I wanted to be an elementary PE teacher. I was afraid of older kids, and I didn't think they would ever listen to me. So my first teaching job was at Freshwater Elementary in Dennis Springs, teaching elementary PE. It was a great job. The kids had PE for an hour, and I had fourth and fifth graders. And there was a guy that was on, had become principal, that had the job that I had at that time. He had gone and left Freshwater to become principal. He had taken somebody's place that was on sabbatical. So when things trickled back, where that guy came back to his job, the guy that I took his place, he came back to his job but left me without a job. So I had a job offer to go to French Settlement and coach basketball and teach six history classes. I said, I really don't want to do that. I don't enjoy history that much, and I don't want to coach basketball for middle school basketball. They said, well, that's the only job in the parish. I said, okay, well, I'll go do something else. I got a phone call a couple weeks later from the same guy. Said, hey, there's a PE opening, a co-ed PE opening in at Doyle High School. And I said, where's Doyle? And he chuckled a little bit and said, Livingston. I said, where's Livingston? He said, it's the city seat. It's the capital of Livingston Parish. I said, oh, okay. So anyway, I went and interviewed, and they offered me an assistant football coach. I hadn't played football since seventh grade. And they offered me the head baseball job. And I'd played baseball a little bit at LSU in 75 and 76. And I said, okay, I'm in. So I never really wanted to coach. And even when I started coaching, the guy I was coaching with, Freddie Joseph, he told me, he says, the rumors are that you're not going to make it through the year, that the kids will run you off. And I said, oh, okay, really? And the kids were as big as I were, bigger and older, and I didn't think I could coach. So when I got the calling, when I felt like I could really do it, is when I had a catcher that was they were stealing second, third base. They were stealing our wallets and everything else. He couldn't throw anybody out. And I brought him to the – I knew I had to bring him to the field early to try to coach him up. I didn't know if he was going to listen to me or not. Mm-hmm. And I coached him up. I got to the field an hour early where I could practice what I was going to say because I wasn't sure he would ever listen. So I practiced. He showed up. I coached him. And amazingly, he listened to every word I said. And at that point in time, I said, I might be called to do this. I might be able to coach.
How important, Coach, is the infield of your baseball teams? And I guess as a comparison, you can look at it as the front line, the offensive line, defensive lines of football. You know, defensively, if things happen beyond there, then you can be in trouble. How important for you has been your infields?
The infield?
Yeah.
For us, always pitching was the first thing because a lot of guys will, if you're making errors, matter of fact, one time in a state semifinal game, we made six or seven errors and we still won. And but the key thing is pitching because if you can try to miss the fat part of the bat, they don't hit it as hard, and you can make some plays. When they're hitting lasers at you, it doesn't matter how much defense you work on, you still can't make plays. So for us, we wanted to be strong up the middle. We always wanted a sound catcher, make sure that your second baseman and your shortstop and your center fielder are consistent. You wanted those guys in the same place every day.
Well, one of the things that that I had a parent tell me about you is they felt like that you were very consistent and very fair over the years, year in and year out, that they watched. The other thing that they said that you're a little bit of a fanatic about the way your infield looks.
I have been accused of caring about grass. And I've gotten in trouble with Coach Guyot before. I turned the sprinkler system on in the middle of football games. I got called in on that one.
I was out there at All-Star Football in there, and I tried to walk on the dirt, and I got shot.
That's good for you. Even when I got out of coaching, people are sending me videos of things going on in the infield, and I'm working at the Struma Baptist Church, and I'm just dying laughing. Like that's Mitch's problem. That's not my problem.
Let's talk a little bit about youth baseball, if you don't mind.
Sure. One of my favorite topics.
All right. Well, good, because I want to hear your thoughts on it over the years of you coaching. I know it's changed. Has it changed for the better or worse?
I think both. I think there's kids are a lot more developed coming out of the younger leagues now. There's more instruction. There's, you know, with internet and being able to get information from, I think there's a lot of good stuff going on. I think there's a lot of coaches that don't understand kids. You have a lot of guys that are it's got away from I learned how to play from my brother playing catch with me in the yard, my dad playing catch with me in the yard. You don't see dads playing catch in the yard anymore with their kids. You see them trying to coach them at 4 years old. So I think that the game has changed from fun to work. I don't remember where sports for me was ever work. Even to this day, I don't think I've ever had a real coaching job that I really worked at. I just enjoyed it. So I think the fun's been taken out of the game. And I think that winning is way too much, too important to, not to the kids. They could care less to some degree. There was a study I found one time, I think, where middle school kids cared about winning eighth on their list, while the coaches winning was number one. So you have a differential in coaching. And also, you know, parents living vicariously through their kids for whatever reason, that they gives them identity of parenting, of being a good parent if your kid's a better player. So
my thought is, and I've fortunately have had the advantage of coaching football for a while and doing it without kids, that I feel like that what gets left out is the reason that sports is as successful as it is, meaning there's life lessons all throughout a sporting event. And we know as coaches that sometimes championships aren't going to always be won, but you have to find minor successes throughout that. And most of the time, those minor successes are teaching those young men how to overcome adversity, how to become better men, how to become better teammates. And it seems like that when a lot of these coaches out there are just missing that whole opportunity.
Well, I'm not sure that we've done a good job of coaching kids in those areas of teaching sports redemption. You know, at Estruma Baptist now, we define competition a little bit differently, where we're striving with rather than striving against, and we strive with for the glory of God rather than for our own glory. So when you look at sports in light of why they were given to us as a gift to give back to God instead of claiming it for ourselves, it makes us look a little bit at things a little bit differently, where we're selfish in how we play and why we play and what we play for. And coaches can either add to that or they can take it away.
You mentioned Estruma Baptist. Talk a little bit about what's going on over there, what your role is there, and how y'all are trying to develop that relationship between baseball and God.
Okay, we do three sports. We also do sports camps and also do some adult stuff. But we use flag football, basketball, and baseball as a bridge to bring kids to come and play. We also use it as a laboratory, which I think is a great thought, because we did that in our coaching. I just didn't do it very well, is where, you know, if God cares about us, does he care about just part of us? So we teach that God cares about all of us, and he cares about our sports and how we play them, who we play for. We teach to play with humility and play with effort, you know, for God's glory. So when you start putting those things in perspective, it doesn't matter if the main difference between competitive sports and recreational sports is the amount of money you pay and the number of games you play. Kids recreationally, they play as hard. They just usually don't practice as much, and their skill level is not as high as because they don't spend as much time doing it. But if those same kids did the same thing, they would be just as good a player, probably.
We're here with M.L. Woodruff, longtime and legendary baseball coach over at Parkview Baptist here on Louisiana Prep Weekly. Coach, we mentioned the pros and cons of youth baseball over the years. I'm sure it can be a pro and a con, the support that comes from parents. But parents can also, you know, there was a quote that sometimes you've had to coach the parents as much as you've had to coach the kids.
Yeah, and I've said that. When I first started coaching, I thought I would just coach the kids, and parents would just do what they wanted to and act like they wanted to. But I found out over time that I could maybe influence them also, because the kids were just byproducts of what their parents thought. So, you know, part of building teams was trying to get kids to play together, where a lot of times parents alienate because they don't see the whole team picture. They just see their Johnny as they are in light of what they become. They don't understand the team concept. So trying to explain that to kids, and we want a lot of kids over in those things, but I'm not sure how many parents we want over.
But it's so true. I mean, whether it's football or, you know, they see one. As coaches, we see 50 or 60, you know, and I think sometimes it's tough for parents to understand that. And, you know, my biggest, you know, I even said this during a parent meeting. I said, look, I know you're not going to agree with everything I do, but discuss it amongst yourselves away from your child. Don't let him hear what y'all have to say, because it's going to break down everything I'm trying to do, which ultimately is going to hurt your son.
Yeah. Well, you know, parenting should be coming alongside the coach and teaching the lessons, because if you want to see what your kid is like, go to a practice or go to a game and just watch them. See how he interacts with other kids, how he respects authorities, how teachable he is. It's an open classroom into their life. But the funny thing about it, parents will go to games and they'll pay money to go see their kid play, but they're not going to the math class or the English class or something like that might be real important. But they live vicariously through their kids. And if things don't go well, then they play the game, the blame game, and blame the coach and others or the umpire for things not going well.
That's one of the things I've said, and I sometimes don't use my filter, but I will say, you know, instead of blaming the umpire or blaming the referee, why don't you go practice more? You know, and I think it's got to be said. And I was just woken up a couple years ago when I got into youth baseball. It just appalled at how the parents act and some of the things that they do. They probably do it in football, too. I just don't hear it as much. You know what I mean? So, you know, I think if I think the competitiveness of travel ball from pitchers throwing, hurting, you know, the coaches letting the pitchers throw 80 pitches to the parents. They think about winning before they think about the safety and the sportsmanship of the game.
Well, we had a friend named Tom House, who was a big league pitching coach, and he defined baseball as a game of failure coached by a negative people in a misinformed environment. Because a lot of people just, they don't know. It's conventional wisdom of what my dad did, what my grandma did. I had a conversation with a lady today. They wanted her son to come in and play ball with us, and he was a 5-year-old. He was still in kindergarten, and she couldn't understand why he needed to start playing T-ball first, and he couldn't just jump in the coach's pitch, and he'd never played before. So I said, I've been doing this for a couple of years, and here's why we do what we do. She says, well, I don't know anything about baseball, but I didn't feel real good about myself because I'm not sure I persuaded her into what we were doing. Because she said, my friend said.
Well, her friend's probably the Internet. But, you know, before we let you go, I've talked to, like, several people, and one of the things that I heard that first of all, I don't even want to talk about your superstition. I heard you always had to have something left off. Something was always missing from your uniform. Is that true?
That's not a superstition. I couldn't find it.
Okay. But so the will to win and avoid the, I guess, me learning to coach baseball, the failure of it, how to translate to the kids, don't worry about failing. Be more worried about winning. They seem to all say that you had a great message when you started talking in those terms for baseball.
Yeah. Now we talked about success of certain careers. We always talked about engineers and a guy that builds bridges. You know, if he builds bridges and he's only successful 3 out of 10 times, he's not going to be an engineer for long. If you're 3 out of 10 in baseball, Major League Baseball, they pay you millions of dollars. So, you know, the ability to look at a game and said, hey, you know, the odds are that I'm going to fail, and then overcoming it is tremendous. That's why a lot of guys can't play, because they can't deal with a failure. They can't deal with and you've got to wait 9 batters before you get a chance to go to the plate. Also, and then you had to define what a good at bat was. You know, you don't put steering wheels on those balls. Mm-hmm. Like after you hit it, you can't drive it. So, you know, the ability to develop kids where they understood the game of baseball, because not always did the best baseball players win games, but those guys that understood the game the best and played the best together, usually we're pretty successful.
Well, Coach, I know it's certainly something that the Baton Rouge community is proud of from a baseball standpoint, from a press sports standpoint, but Louisiana statewide and what you've meant to the sport of baseball and high school athletics, and congratulations on your induction.
Well, thank you. I'm honored, humbled. It's like the turtle. If you ever see a turtle on the fence post, he didn't get there by himself. So God certainly blessed me, put lots of good people around me, good kids, good parents, good bosses, good administration. There was a lot of reasons that went into it, and I just look back and I die laughing, and I go, like, only God could have done this. So I'm very honored, and it's pretty funny at times where you hear stories and stuff and go, like, not sure how that worked out, but it certainly did.
It's true. You're only as good as the people around you, right?
Yes, yes.
How about another round of applause for Coach tonight? Coach M.L. Woodruff from Parkview Baptist will be soon inducted as a member of the 2016 Louisiana High School Sports Hall of Fame. Cade Wise and Todd Black here on Louisiana Prep Weekly. We'll be right back to close out tonight's show, 104.5, 104.9 ESPN Baton Rouge.